A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You know, you can be all the things you've always wanted to be. Beautiful, sexy, easy as 1, 2, 3.
Just let your soul glow. Just let it shine through. Just let your soul glow.
I'm Mouse Jones.
I'm Fly Ra.
Will Little.
And we are back for the part two of the
Dose.
This great story. We have the pleasure of having Will Little from the Behind the Bullet documentary that just dropped everywhere on streaming, as well as the Emmy award-winning documentary Power Forgiveness, Philadelphia's own. Just a brother out here, really. When somebody says they're out here saving the community, out here doing the work, this is Will Little. So thank you for coming back and finishing up with us. That was my fault.
Yeah, come on now.
It's bills. I don't think y'all want to talk to bills anymore.
No, not right now. maybe later.
It's bills. I think we've talked to him enough. So yes, before we jump back into it, we continue to thank you guys for tuning in and listening, rocking with us, continue supporting us. Subscribe everywhere you listen to podcast apps. Steal your grandmother's phone. Subscribe there.
Granny need to hear this.
Granny need to hear the good stuff that's going on this podcast. Ladies, if you're going through your man's phone, send yourself some money, cash app yourself some money or something, and then subscribe to the podcast. Fellas, don't be going through women's phone. But if you do, check the group chat. and most importantly, subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Instagram, guysnextdoor_. You matter of fact, go like the picture. Go put 13 hearts underneath the picture right now. The last picture on our Instagram, go put 13 hearts underneath the picture right now if you really fuck with us.
13.
As well, if you want to continue the conversation on Twitter, using the hashtag guys next door. Not boys next door, them next door, guys, yo, no. Guys next door. And if you want to get a letter read on air, it's very simple. All you have to do, write in to guysnextdoor123 @gmail.com. In the subject line, if this is a relationship-based question, to save your anonymity, you should put your own name. Because if not, we're going to say what's in front of us. Shout out to Jasmine. And last but not least, pictures. You have to put your pictures in there. If this is relationship-based, the only way this question is getting answered, we have to see what we're working with here.
Okay? Absolutely.
It's just absolutely. At this point, you know.
Y'all know. We don't got to explain why. Or Ryan, when or how?
Canoodle Corner. Which are they still slacking?
Yeah, they slacking, but you know, I'm gonna just start doing it my damn self.
Because it's the winter month's about to be here. Niggas gonna.
I might start going on dates.
You gonna go on dates?
I might.
You trying to catch something for the couple?
I might do a Canoodle Corner for me. That's crazy.
You just broke the internet now.
That's,
you know,
crazy,
that,
right?
You just broke the internet now.
I did.
Yo, your DM's about to be broke.
Yeah, we'll see if it's the right break.
It might be a hairline fracture.
Let's see if she catches the right break. Bug it up.
All right. Well, we do have the good brother from Philadelphia. We do have Will in here. So,
The
way we finished off was you coming home.
Yes. And you're in a halfway house.
In the halfway house. And I asked you, what was your mindset returning? Do you remember that quote you used?
Right.
Well, just open that up.
Progress over pride.
Bang.
Progress over pride.
What is that? What does that even mean?
What that means is, I know that a lot of People want to live how they used to live once they get out of jail. You know, I know you hear like a million stories in one, how a person was getting money on the streets or how much they was making and how many girls they had.
I was getting it, bro. I was getting it. You don't even know, bro. I was back in my day, back then.
I had 14 cars.
Yeah, you know, it was back then. You know, praise was cheap. So, you know, it was points on the package.
13 sweaters. I had it all.
I'm going to get it like I always got it, basically.
Right, right.
So with me, I knew that was the hustle thing was out for me because I knew it would turn me right back, revert me back to the same behavior that I had before. And in order for me to be successful in this transition and walk 11 years off after seeing people come right back in as a revolving door, I knew that progress over pride was very important. I mean, when I left the prison, I took a vivid picture of the prison when I walked on that gate.
Like mentally?
Mentally. Because my cell was facing the gate when people leave and come in. So every morning I woke up, I looked at the gate and said, one day I'm going to walk out.
Was that inspirational or was it like torture?
No, it was inspirational to me because I knew it was going to happen.
So you saw a lot of people come back through that door that left.
Yeah, right, exactly. Holy you know, shit. Within weeks.
That's probably the within inspirational
weeks.
Part.
Within weeks and days. You know, so it's just kind of your first time on parole and or your first time on be on parole. It's basically like, all right, well, if you doubt yourself saying like, all right, I got like 10 years to walk off or no, 11 years to walk off. And I know I'm going to come back to jail because I got all this time to walk off because everybody's felon. Everybody go home, come back. I mean, so you have that stigma in your mind that you might come back to jail. For me, it's like I had to fight against that. Like, no, I ain't coming back to jail. I ain't never coming back. So when I walk out the gate, I look back at myself.
Recidivism is a real thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely real. It's like 70% rate.
Fuck. Shit.
You know, within 3 years, mostly everybody's coming back.
Happy to be a part of that 30.
I mean, so
that's a fucking fact.
Yeah. So walking back, when I walked out that gate and I looked at that cell from where I was standing at, looked at the trees, looked at the mountains, I'm like, look, this is it for me. I ain't never coming back unless I come in teaching. You know, so I left, I came home. Try to get a job. I was in a halfway house, and I was getting turned down because a thing was going on with my record. I didn't even know this was going on. When you go on file and look at my record, it says I has two homicide convictions instead of one. All right, so my application was going straight in the trial. I didn't find this out until I went to Canada 2 years ago. I was trying to get in Canada, and they wouldn't let me in. All right, and because they don't let nobody. You're banned from Canada forever if you have a homicide.
Man, don't get me started on Canada.
So
that last time I went, I was there.
I mean, real quick, real short with that story is like basically they approved me to come in now because of what I do, the work I do. And when I came home, it's like, all right, now I can't go back to hustling, even though my friends were still out there, but still had coke and all that stuff like that.
How was the? Sorry to cut you off. The your Cody's, how was their transition?
They came. Some came back. You know, okay, they got locked up, came back because they got out 6 years. They did 6 years. They got out before me, like 4 years before me.
So you saw them come back?
No, I wasn't in the same jail.
They went back somewhere else.
Went back. Yeah, like twice. I think they went back once or twice before they got together. But even with that, for me, it's like I ain't coming back. I'm gonna beat the system. You know. And I'm gonna beat all the odds that's facing me, against me. You know what I mean? Because, second chances was out when you come. You got a felony such as mine. Like, you wouldn't get no job nowhere. You wouldn't get accepted in the community, no programs, none of that stuff. You can't even get an apartment because they're doing background checks. And I didn't know it was that severe. But, you had to adapt and adjust to the environment. And I eventually got a job in a warehouse, working in a warehouse, doing forklift driving and stuff like that.
How long in between your release in the time you got a job?
About probably 2 weeks. I got a hookup. My cousin worked there, and she vouched for me, and they brought me in. But the thing when they brought me in was, it's all about usury. I mean, I'm going to use you because you just, like, they had a lot of Asians working in the building. I mean, so they was paying them minimum wage, pay me minimum wage because I'm a felon. I think I ain't going to get no job nowhere else. And they was using that against me, holding that on my head. So I worked there for like a year and a half. And I was like, I got to do better than this. I can't take care of it. Now I got a second son, so I can't take care of my two
sons. Oh, you got right back to it.
Yeah.
You got right to it.
Yeah. Come on. He 30? Like, yeah, come on now. Yeah. Come on.
Look, I'm 30 now, but I got two right now, and 30 has me like, you know, I could
yeah, but you ain't sit. He was like, we gotta make this happen.
You made up for lost time.
Exactly, yeah. For sure. I mean, so with that, just working there now, working with both of them, my sons and my girl at the time, and having a job, having a car too as well. So I got a lot of bills stacking up. Now I'm learning how to work financially. I mean, get more financially literate. And basically just trying to manage everything as a household and everything else.
How scary was that first week home? Because you go in and you go in 89.
Right.
You don't come home until 98.
Yeah.
That's 11 years. Like, what, between all that time. So you come home, there's cell phones. Mm-hmm. There's email now, but obviously in its infancy, but, right. You know, there's laptops, computers,
right.
All of this, like, how, that's my biggest fear, right? Like, that's what everybody's, I'm always like, I can't go to jail, because I got friends that got locked up when we was 17, 18. Mm-hmm. Them niggas have no idea what an iPhone feels like.
Right.
Them niggas do not know nothing about an iOS update. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd be... You see how many iOS updates there is right now? My niggas will come home and be fucked up.
Yeah, course,
you get what I'm saying? So what was that like? How scary was that first week home?
Well, I mean, it was scary in a sense, because for me, even walking across, when I got released, I told my family, meet me at McDonald's in the gallery. I mean, gallery was like a little mall downtown. So me crossing the street, across Market Street was scary to me. Like, my time was off, everything was off. Like, I'm jaywalking, trying to get across the street. It's like a scary moment for me. Something like, normally you were playing traffic. But even with that part, it was kind of scary because I wasn't even adjusted right. I mean,
I know that change is crazy. Yeah. 10 years?
Yeah.
What 10 years can do for, especially 89 to 99?
Think about it. He went in.
Crack was hitting.
He went in, crack was not just hit, crack was beating the
crack
shit
was,
out
crack
of us.
Was booming.
Yeah, that was
he goes in, but look, let's even keep it a bean. Like, let's keep it, well, we all know, let's keep it hip hop, right? 89, he goes in, Public Enemy is running the game.
Right.
You get out.
You come home, DMX just, he come home 98, DMX released three albums. And like,
yeah. It goes from that type of rap to that type of rap.
Exactly. So what was that like? What was that transition?
Well, we heard
but you heard it.
In jail. We heard all that.
I mean, and then plus with the people coming in and out, yeah, they're bringing
they're
that.
Talking about it, talking about Biggie Smalls. You hear on the radio, you got CDs.
What was it like when...
cassette tapes and all that.
What was it like when Biggie and Pac died in there? Because I know Philly is East Coast, but I know there's a lot. I know too many Pac fans from Philly.
It was a sad moment for a lot of people. I mean, so,
like, did the jail have that sullen feel?
Yeah,
that the rest of the world had.
People was hurt by it. Yeah, people was hurt by it for sure. I mean, even with me being I was a Pac fan, and then kind of didn't like Pac a little bit when he went on the East Coast, West Coast side.
You transferred to the Biggie. I know.
Biggie was always my man. So.
I knew he had a good energy.
Yeah,
I seen
the Biggie.
He was talking.
It glowed off of him.
I knew my man would have a good
beard,
energy.
I seen the beard. It's all right.
Big was real. I mean, I think Big was realer than Pac. Basically.
And most definitely. Without a doubt.
He was himself.
With the waves. You know what I'm saying?
Pac was whoever the people around him wanted him to be at the moment. Big was just big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So we was feeling Big for sure. I mean, classy. I mean,
how was niggas getting? Cause you know niggas is fly outside, but once you come in jail, you know. And my dad did some time, so he's telling me about, like, you know, the fly niggas. Some niggas he did the time in New York, but he's like, the fly niggas, they pressing their uniform. Like, how was that? Like, was people still
try to keep a street?
Like, how are you keeping yourself?
Try to keep the outside inside as
right.
As
like,
much
how
as
you
can.
Keeping yourself throughout these 9 years?
Well, mainly it's for me, it was like, when I first got locked up, it was like still street mentality. I mean, I was still playing ball. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about my case. Like, y'all playing ball, you got to get life in jail. Like, some old heads to tell us, like, man, I ain't thinking about that. I'm living in the moment, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to keep myself up. So playing ball, lifting weights, start working out more, start boxing when I was in jail. I mean, doing activities that can keep me occupied, basically. But then when I got into the reading, the self-awareness, studying stuff, and I started studying more religion, that's how I became Muslim. I started studying about life in general. And then trying to just deal with my family on the outside, watching my son grow up, keep in contact with them, write letters, write poetry. You know, I was into really like writing poetry, so like therapeutic poetry. And then just mainly just focusing on me, like, I mean, my development. I turned the state penitentiary into my Penn State.
Wow. I mean,
so, boss.
Wow. You so, flipped a biggie bar there, too. I really like this guy. This is my favorite episode. I'm not going to lie to you.
Beautiful.
We've done a lot of episodes this year. It's my favorite episode. Somebody flipped a biggie bar.
Fire.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's how I adjusted and adapted. I mean, and like I said, the more I got to learn myself, the more I was able to navigate my way through that system and out that system. And I didn't really find my voice until, because I was always a quiet, reserved person, so I ain't never found my voice until a group of college students came into the Pittsburgh, the Greensburg jail. And they was walking around the jail and they was looking at everything, my fault. They was looking at everything in the jail, the phones in the yard, the free weights, the gymnasium looking really good, better than their recreation centers. The college degrees you can get, why you in prison, HBO, the cable we had on there. She was like, you know, it was like probably 6 or 7 blacks and 5 whites. And he's like, let me rest in here in the staff dining hall, because I was working in the staff dining hall. And I was like, yeah, you can work in here. You can rest in here while accounting go on. So we said, can we ask you a question? I was like, why not? She was like, we walked around this prison and we see y'all got phones in the yard, y'all got phones in your block, y'all got HBO, y'all got cable, y'all got good food, y'all got a gymnasium, it's a state of the art, I mean, free weights and all that stuff like that. She said, how is this prison? How is this punishment? So I thought about it, and I was like, I looked at it, and I looked at all the rest of them, and I was like, it's not for us. She's like, what you mean? I said, it's not for us. It's really against us. She said, why you say that? I said, well, if you think about it, have you ever been on vacation before? She said, yeah. You ever been to like Bahamas or somebody, Jamaica? Yeah, Jamaica. I said, all right. When you went to Jamaica, how they treat you? They treated me good. How the hotel was? It was good, right? Yeah. Like, atmosphere was good. Everything was good. She's like, yeah. I said, okay. So would you go back? She's like, yeah, I'll go back. I think of my prison the same way. It's a revolving door. They want to make you comfortable. They want to make you happy. They want to get you in a state that where as though you don't mind coming back. It could be your second home. Why? Because it's a market. It's a business.
It's money.
I mean, I studied like the prison system when I was in jail. Around that time, I was studying about the prison system.
But that was before it had became so privatized.
Right. But talking about the penitentiary, which was the first penitentiary was in Pennsylvania on Walnut Street. And the Quakers had built that prison, right? And it stood for penitence. So when a person would go to jail, he'd have penitence about what he'd done and kind of, you know, change his life around. You know, feel sorry and everything else, change his life around. That's why they had House of Corrections.
Yeah, it's for the correct. Like, yeah,
but now it's like the DOC, Department of Corrections. Mm-hmm. Now it's like mostly like about money, privatization and investing and stuff like that. So Little Debbie, she's getting millions of dollars in that joint. Billions of dollars. I ain't buy Little Debbie when I came home since.
That's the shit. Because they catch you with that candy and all that sweets. You lose your teeth in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yo, you remember when Star was on here, she was talking about.
I wasn't there.
What?
No, but I knew some people when I was there that was missing teeth, and I was like, "How?" They was like, "Cupcakes, you know, they make the they call it the where I was at. It was a birthday cake where they take all the snacks and they just mix them things up,
everything together.
So that alone, your teeth will they'll suffer off that.
I think the most important question I would have, at least in this part, when you're now home, you're working, what is the relationship and what is the like the phase of the relationship that you've went through with your son? Because he's growing up without you there, right. And now you're back.
Right.
And then he had to also grow up 9 years without you there. So that itself is a mental adjustment. Now he has to grow with you there and deal with, I don't want to speak for him, but I know when I speak to a lot of my friends who grew up with parents who was locked up, there's a sense of abandonment. Right. Even if the parent didn't abandon, like even if they were as present as possible.
Right.
You're not there.
Right.
So, like, what was that relationship and what are those phases that you went through with your son during your transition home?
Well, the phrases didn't really start and making an impact until he got into teenage years.
Right.
Right. But my son, he's just like me. I mean, his character is just like mine. Mm-hmm. So, mild, 10 years old. Yeah. I mean, quiet, laid back, don't express himself, don't say too much. I mean, try to deal with things on his own. You know, so what I did was, when I first came home, I was in a happy house, 98 to 99. And when I got out, I was going back and forth to Atlanta because his mom moved to Atlanta the same year I got out, basically.
Wow.
Right. So I was upset about that. Why would you wait till I come home, then move? Right. So I started, I said, I'm going to get my son. I mean, like, my father didn't do for me. He didn't come down to Philly and get me. So I got in my car, drove down Atlanta, picked him up like one summer, the next summer. Then after that, I was like, look, let me just take him. I mean, let me just raise him because I need to raise him. He's getting like teenager now, 12 years old. I mean, so she let me have him, brought him back home. And I want to see what it's like to raise a child.
That's amazing that she let that happen.
Yeah.
I know a lot of my friends struggle with that just to see their child. So
yeah, that's a blessing. It was a knockdown, drag out fight for me to get custody of my oldest daughter.
So like with her, man, we always had a good relationship regardless if I was in prison or not. That's why I think more so she was like, okay.
And then there was a trust there.
She struggled. I mean, so he was raising, then she had another daughter too while I was in jail.
She had two kids.
Yeah. So at the same time, I was like, look, let me just take him and let me experience that. All the years you had him, now it's my time to do it.
Dope.
So she was like, all right. So I started raising him up. Then it's raising him, then take him to school. Things I wanted to do, things I imagined doing when I came home. Take him to the mall, doing things with him. I mean, playing ball with him and stuff like that. So the relationship was, the connection was really good. I mean, I started learning him. I had to watch him to learn him, you know, and ask him certain questions because I know he was just like, this guy's just like me when I was a kid, you know. But when he got older in his teenage years and he started venturing out and having like friends on the street corners and they hustling and stuff like that, a lot of the stuff, when I wrote my book in 2008, my nephew, K. Walker, he read the book, right? He's like, yo, Unc was like, he was like the man on the street. And he's like, well, he know that anyway from him just being in the street. People telling him about his uncle. Like, when I came home, I was on a preppy tip, though. I had my little glasses, spot glasses on, vested suit. I mean, all that stuff on, walking that. He's like, I ain't see the person. My, like, K. Walker always said, I ain't see that person that everybody was talking about.
Right.
Seeing it different. I said, well, that's good. So now I understood my son. You know what I'm saying? And my son didn't believe nothing in my book. Right, he's like, y'all believe that? He'll tell K Walker, y'all believe that? I ain't my papa.
Him and K Walker the same age?
Yeah, K Walker older, I mean, a year older than him.
Okay,
right. So K Walker's like, yo, that's your dad. Like, that's his story. He's like, man, I don't believe it. So my son really didn't believe all the stuff I was doing based on my book saying. I mean, so it took a while. Like now he believe it. I mean, but it took a while for him to like really understand like the transformation I made. And I understood he didn't believe it because he didn't see that in me, which was good for me. Like, you don't see none of that in me. You don't see none of that.
Kids are very much a C.
Yeah, if he'd have been a different person, if he would have knew that was you from jump, instead of you teaching or instilling those things that happened in the back of the day to what it is now.
Right. I mean, so for me, it was like a plus. Like, all right, I did change because he don't see that kind of attitude in me. He don't see that kind of mentality in me or that kind of aggression. I'm saying I don't use that. Like some dudes come home and they got like a homicide or they shot somebody. They want to use that as leverage for them to have some kind of respect on the street. Yeah.
I didn't care nothing about the respect.
That was nonsense to me. I mean, I just cared about being real. I mean, so it was a real situation, a real experience. And now I'm looking to do better. I mean, the only reason why I was in that situation because of ignorance. So I want to stay ignorant or do I want to get smart? I want to be educated. So,
I felt like that was an attack on me. Like that was such a poignant point.
Yeah, like
that was such a poignant point.
Yeah, boy.
Because that's me. Right. Like, and everybody listen, Brian, to tell you, everybody in this room tell you, like, that's me. Mm-hmm. Like I struggle so much with just I have this like fuck it factor. Like I tell everybody, like, I only care about being a man at the end of the day.
Right.
And being a man ain't what you describe it. Being a man is. When I go to sleep at night and I ask myself, was you a man today? Mm-hmm. That means I checked off all my check marks. Like, all right, did you stand tall on what you believed in? Right. Did you, if niggas violated you, did you handle it? Did you tolerate disrespect? All of that shit. And I'd be ready to throw bread away over it. Like, it'll be a simple, like, just disrespect. And I'd be like,
I'll have to tell him, like, yo, you can handle this another way or we can get this money and we can just let this shit ride over. Okay. Then we go back and forth, but then at the end of the day he realized, he like, yo, You're right.
Well, you gotta hit him with that progress over pride next time.
Oh no, we using that. I'm telling you right now, it's probably gonna be a tattoo.
That's what I was about to say.
I'm probably gonna get a tattoo. Like, and when you see it, just know, Will, that's you.
Right.
Like, but that's the shit. That's what it's about, right? Like, that's what about. That's what I literally love about your activism. That it's not just protest. And nothing against you need a protest active, but I think people need to realize like there's other facets and faces of activism. All right, boom, you gonna fight the front line, you gonna fight the racial injustice and poverty, boom, boom. But Will and his people, they gonna be inside the community.
Right.
And they gonna be talking to when we do get answers for the racial injustice and all that, that we'll be prepared mentally and emotionally to deal with it and really move forward than just looking like sheeps in a herd.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, they're programmed. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is about, we were programmed to our environment and our community. So I had to deprogram myself. I mean, understand like what is my true value?
It's so hard.
I'm going to tell you this, right? Everything is hard. Like I tell my students, everything is hard until you start doing it. 1+1 was hard at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the simplicity in it is more so that the more you practice, the more you get better.
Repetition.
You don't get perfect.
It's just like the gym.
Right? Yeah. So exactly. It's like the gym.
Like we, all three of us, me, Brian, and Mac, we in the gym heavy. Mm-hmm. And it's literally just like that. It's like, like I'll watch myself, like I'll look at myself like, damn, this shit heavy, but it don't hurt no more.
Right. Exactly.
Like I feel it working, but it don't hurt no more. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
but see, that's the way we think when it comes to doing something different, right? Discovering our difference. And when you think that way, you kind of deter yourself from really accomplishing something greater than who you are, I'm saying, at the moment, right? So who are you going to be in 2020? Who are you going to be 2021? That's the question you should be asking yourself every
Somebody
year.
Who did not vote from Trump. That's right. Who I that would too. Be in 2020.
That was me in 2015.
that was somebody. So you're out, you and your son.
Two.
You and your two sons?
Yeah, right.
All right, and that'll be the last question, because I know people, I'm the same way about my kids. I don't want to talk about my kids all the time. But so was there ever, or are there ever, or maybe you don't even know, maybe this is a conversation they've had personally. Was there ever a jealousy from your older son to the youngest son, because he's had you from the very beginning, and your older son missed 9 years, or at least missed your physical presence for 9 years.
No, not at all. Just I say the beauty in. I'm glad my son's picked up my characteristics.
Both of them,
right?
That's dope.
I mean, so the beauty in that is more so that like my son, he don't sweat small stuff. Neither one of them do. I mean, they're focused on something that's probably major if it comes up. But if not, they're working out themselves. I mean, so none of them have really like jealousy. They're connected by the hip.
That's dope.
You know what I'm saying, with each other now.
How many years?
They 10 years apart.
The 10 years.
How old are they now?
My oldest son is 29. My other son is 19.
It's like, my little brother 22. I'm 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think out of all my siblings, I think my youngest, not anymore. I have a 7-year-old sister now, so yeah, the ages range.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Big old. Okay, so now you're out, you're working. How long are you still at the warehouse?
No, I actually leave the warehouse 2.5 years later. I kind of like
stayed
quit.
There for 2 years.
Yeah, I kind of like quit, and I went to Pepsi. You know, Pepsi Cola, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Pepsi, and they told me they was hiring over there. I filled out the applications
for warehouse work.
Yeah, for warehouse work. I mean, because they was paying $17 an hour now. I want to get over there. Where the money is at? I goes over there.
$17 an hour.
I get two interviews. You know what I'm saying, with both the supervisors. I told him about my history as far as the homicide, stuff like that. He's like, bet, coming for orientation. So now I'm excited, I'm hyped, go back to the old job. Like, yo, I'm out of this joint, I'm done. You know what I'm saying? I mean, y'all can stay over here, y'all can go away with me, try to come over there, whatever. So I just quit the job. I ain't give him a 2-week notice, none of that stuff, right? So the Saturday comes, I get a letter in the mail from corporate here in New York, right?
Pepsi.
Yeah. So they're like, yo, we cannot accept your application because your background check came back, and we can't.
Told them.
Yeah, but that's the corporate now.
Oh, gotcha.
So it was a higher grounds. So basically, like, now I'm out of a job. So my girl's like, yo, why don't you go back to your old job? No, I can't go back to the old job.
You flipped.
Yeah, I flipped on that joke. I mean, plus, And he was like kind of dude that had his foot in your neck. Like he was a black dude though. Mm-hmm. He had your foot in your neck. And he's like, you can't get no job nowhere else. So I couldn't deal with that. I probably went upside his head or something. So I got to control my anger. I said, I know me. So I'm not going to put myself in this situation.
Don't even go back there.
So
now you're looking for a new job.
So in 12 years, mm-hmm. you've worked. Even because right. even in jail, you were working.
Right.
So now you are on the streets, a felon. Are you on parole?
Yeah,
I'm on parole.
Two kids,
two sons. Mm-hmm. You have custody. Oh, you have physical custody of over one of them, mm-hmm. and now you have no job.
Right, and a car.
In a car, you got bills.
Insurance, yeah.
What's happening? Like, what in your mind?
In my mind right now, at this moment, is like, because I'm in a spot I've never been in before. Mm. I'm in a situation I've never been in before.
Because even back in the day, you was
right.
getting money.
He was getting bread. Exactly. He couldn't go, like, he didn't want to go back to what he was doing.
Right, so that's come a thought in your mind. It pops in your head.
I was about to ask, so does ever that you say, man, I was good. I could
get it back.
Cool. I could get right.
I mean, I knew I could. I knew I had the trust of the streets. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And I knew I can go hustle again, but more so that I'm looking at my sons. I mean, like, that's not the way. And I knew, like I said, you got to have patience. I'm a patient person, so I do have patience. So I tell myself, you got to have more patience. You got to have patience. Something's going to happen. Something's going to come through. And I believe, like, with every hardship, there is ease, right? Mm. And with every hardship, I mean, the greater the reward.
You never hear that.
Right.
You literally never hear that. Everybody always say with great kindness. Like, explain that. With every hardship, there's ease.
Well, actually, that's a verse in the Quran, mm. right? And Allah says that with every difficulty, there comes ease, right? So understanding that, like, you know, you have good times, you have bad times. Mm-hmm. But it's also how you look at it, how you see the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, because a bad time for you may not be a bad time for me. So it's all about our perception of it. So with my perception of that moment is like saying, okay, what am I going to do? I've never been in a situation like before. I got to get another job. I know it's hard for me to get a job anywhere else. But I'm not going to go back to the street. I'm not going to do that. So I got to figure out something.
So that was your hard time.
Right. That was my hard time. It was a struggle. It was a challenge. I mean, but within that challenge, the door opened up. A real door opened up because a barbershop opened up the corner of my block. Right?
That's another thing. Niggas from Philly could fight and cut hair. It's in their DNA. Niggas are born with the ability to give you a fire shape up.
Razors and razors.
Or take it to your shape up. Either one or two.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Razors and razors.
Razors and razors. Look, I only go to one bar, but when I hit Philly, I hit C's and we right over there. Like, you won't even know it wasn't my same barber. Like, sometimes I'd be like, yeah, listen, see, I might have to figure out how to come down here twice a week.
I got to get a cut, Philly, because, you know, they do the beards justice, yo. Right. Son, my barber cut my joint down. I was kind of tight.
Yeah, he violated your shit.
But it's all right. We coming back.
You coming back. Two weeks. I'm going to put you on with C's next time we in Philly.
Oh, you can see me. That's one or two.
Oh, you cutting too?
Yeah,
yo. He talked about the barbershop. I heard him say it, so I knew the cuts was coming through. Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Discount
guys there. Next door, we coming for the cut.
I went to the corner block, and my homie just came from jail. Another friend of mine from in that neighborhood. He's like, "Yeah, why don't you come in and cut hair?"
Did you ever cut in jail?
I cut razor comb my own side. Oh, yeah. I mean, I had the waves flowing and all that stuff like that then. So I always wanted to throw that out.
You heard it, right? You heard it? Because I was going to ask him. I said, nah, I ain't going to
I put the durag on last night, but they did.
It's just spinning.
No durag. I don't even really do that, you know?
He said, you heard it, though. He's like, yeah, I had to wait.
All right, so basically, when I went down there, I was like, okay, cool. So I asked my man who owned the shop, like, yo, Jazz, you know, can I get a chair? He's like, yeah, get a chair. No problem. Get your stuff. So no application. All right.
No certification.
No certification, no background check, none of that stuff.
None of the bullshit you have to worry about working for, quote unquote. How intrusive or how invasive is your parole? Like, are they checking in on you every 5 minutes trying to make sure? Okay.
No, see, one thing about parole is that you can dictate your parole by your character.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Because no, I get that. Like, I didn't see where you were going with that because I know so many people that parole is a bitch for. It's like, yeah, I would have sat down.
But I also feel like parole is a bitch for people that still want to stay in the streets.
Right. That's what it is.
That's when it's a bitch because you want to do X, Y, and Z and you can't, but you think you can. But that's when your parole turns out. You make one little mistake, and it's like, what you doing? But when you go on a straight and narrow path, and you lead it towards the light.
Like you said, you dictated by your behavior.
His ease was getting that legit job.
I had 10 different parole officers the only time I was out. 10 different ones. I mean, so the whole thing is like one told the other, like, you ain't got to worry about Will. You ain't got to worry about him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I was boxing and everything, coming up Atlantic City fighting, I mean, in Bali's. I was doing this thing, have no problem. As long as you don't get no trouble, you cool. Traveling right. down Atlanta, you don't get no trouble, you cool. So it's like you dictate it, I mean, based on your character. And like I said, if a person want to be on getting high or want to sell drugs or hustle,
it's going to be a problem. Parole's going to be a problem.
Because the parole officer, they got 10, 15 people they got to oversee.
So they almost don't want to have to.
Yeah, they don't want right. to. They don't want to have to see you all the right. time.
Because it was great. Like, Star was here. That shit was blowing up.
Yeah.
You sit on the couch. Yeah. We doing the interview. Her shit parole officer blowing her shit up.
But that's the life that you choose to be around and live in.
Right.
It doesn't even have to be her.
It can just be her.
The company you keep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
So that's how it was for me. I mean, it was smooth selling for me.
So now you're at the barbershop.
Now I'm at the barbershop. I'm learning how to cut hair, and I had to really talk to myself first, because I said, now I don't tolerate disrespect from no one. My first time really dealing with the public. I mean, and I really had to stay focused, and I want to get this done, because now I'm on a mission to you know, take care of myself and my children, and this got to work for me, right? So I learned to start cutting hair. I'm a quick learner, so I start picking up really, like doing regular Caesars.
Basically, right. How
I was scared of the fade at first.
I was about to say, look, I cut for 4 years, and I quit because of the fade. I said, nah, I can't get.
I remember always getting a Caesar. And then I moved to Jersey for a year. He gave me a matter of fact. I think I went to New York when I was living in Jersey.
Yeah.
Somebody gave me a fade, and I was scared to go to school because, you know, nobody really had fades in school.
Did not have fades.
Everybody had a Caesar, and everybody looking at me like this. I'm like,
by the time you had high school, it was all Caesar.
It was all Caesar.
Niggas was not having fades. I never had a fade. My mom always. Bald in my
yeah, I always had a dark Caesar. I mean, I had dreads. I had started with dreads, and I had a light Caesar, dark Caesar. Then I got a fade one time. I was just like, okay, this will be going with it. Right. And now, you know.
You fade, Poppy?
Yeah. I just, you know.
Get faded. Yeah. So how long did it take you to perfect the fade?
Well, I mean, I tried a few times doing it. Then I was like, I was really scaring myself.
Right.
And I was like, man, I'm missing that $20. Like, I gotta get this thing down. I'm passing it off to somebody. I go to somebody else. No, I ain't doing it no more. I'm gonna keep working it until I get it. So I started doing it and cutting it, and then it started coming to me. And I practice on my nephews.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, use them up, go home, practice on them. Then it came.
If you could count, how many Zeeks you think you handed out?
Word. How many pushbacks?
Because I know I Zeeked up. In my day.
How many free fitted you had to buy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can shape up really good. I know how to shape up from the razor. So that wasn't my problem. The problem was just blending the hair. And when you have different nationalities coming in your shop, white, Asian, black, you know what I'm saying? It's a whole different hair texture. So you really got to learn the texture more so than the cut.
You
know what I mean? And then what clips that you're going to use to fade it out and bring it out. I mean, so then you, it's good because then you have all nationalities, and then now you're not cutting everybody here. I mean,
do you remember the cut where you were like, I get it? Like the cut where like,
I'm nice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. When you have everything and you ain't wasting time, like I was sweating bullets at some time doing that joint. Like, you're in that point, you never know you're finished. You start like, yes. I don't know if I'm finished. You said it to yourself, and he like, are you nervous? Now the person know you're nervous. So it was like,
I had the biggest drug dealer who here I was cutting in Virginia. And I said, why the fuck would they send him to me? Like shout out to Rick, shout out to Capital Cuts, everybody on Granby Street who fucked with me. I appreciate y'all. Because I was down there but in the Navy. So I was cutting here. I'm like, I got to do something that remind me of home. My uncle on barbershop. So I'm cutting here and there. And the owner, Rick, is like, that's who usually cuts the drug dealer hair, right? So he like, yo, New York got you? I'm like, what? Nah, son, nah. Yeah. All he wanted was a quick shape up before the club. Right. I'm like, this nigga already has a shape up. Mm-hmm. He was just here 2 days ago. So he come to me, he like, yo, you got me, right? I'm like, I'm about to die today. I shaped this nigga hair up for 45 minutes. Wow. I'm like, all right. No. The thing that caught him off guard was I just kept talking shit. Like, we were just laughing, joking, da-da-da. So by the time he thought he was keeping me long. Nigga, I'm in there sweating. I'm like, he's like, yo, let me see what I look like. He said, nigga, I could have been done 15 minutes ago. I said, I just wanted to make sure. Because I didn't want to die today. I want to die. But shout out to Capital Cuts by the time down there. But that, from niggas who ever cut hair, I don't care, professionally or... You never think you done when you don't know what you're doing. You right. never think you done. You right. just, oh, shit. You know, let me run that back. To the point where, like, when my barber do shit, I'd be like, what, nigga, you already did that. What the fuck you keep going back for?
When they pushing it back.
Keep tapping that same spot.
You keep tapping that same spot and doing that little comb.
Bat, bat.
Nigga, you don't push my shit back,
right? That's how it sound. Bat, bat, bat.
And then you can tell it's getting back because you hear a little more, nigga. Nigga, that was more hair that was dead. Just let me go.
Facts.
Let me go. So you now you're at the barbershop, and then this is when I want to start talking about your partner. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Kadir.
Kadir. Yeah. So that is the brother of the man you killed in 88 or 89. 89. Now, from my research and talking to people around Philly, they're telling me he the whole time you were locked up, he's looking for you. Mm. He is holding his grudge, as anybody would. I'm avenging my brother. But really, it amped up once you came home. Like, he was, you could tell a story. Like I said, I found out through research, but you could tell a story better. And by all means, if you want to call him up and we get his part as well. But how is it going? How talk to us about that.
Okay, so I was in a shop. This happened in 2015. So I was in a shop since 2001.
So now this is something that's been dragged on. This is what, 2015? How old are we?
That's almost 20. That's 25 years.
So this is something that he's been dealing with for 25 years. This is a 25 year ongoing thing.
Right. So I kind of knew of him. Mm-hmm. Right. And when the incident first happened in 89, I knew he had a brother. And
his brother was tough in the streets.
Yeah, he had a name. He had a reputation on the streets too, as well. So fighting, stabbing people. Mm-hmm.
So they somebody. Came from a lineage from the father to the son.
Right, right. Exactly. So now it's for him. It's definitely you gotta avenge your brother's death.
Absolutely.
That's the name like on the streets. Like you ain't gonna be mud on the street.
And they come from a family.
Right.
They come from
family, friends, everybody around them.
I'm saying they come from
a lineage.
That
was a black mafia,
gangster shit. So it's like you gotta handle your business.
Right. Exactly. Right. So.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The while when he got locked up too. When I first came home, I think when I came home in 98, in the halfway house, he got locked up.
Okay.
So he did like probably 5 years for assault or something.
Okay.
Then he was in jail. From what he was telling me, he was in jail. He was talking to people about, I'm going to get Will when I come home, et cetera, et cetera. So some of the dudes in jail was like, yo, man, just go talk to Will. Dude, you can talk to. You can go just rap to him. Man, you're a cool dude. You know what I mean? So you see stuff because all in the papers, I'm in the front page of Daily News and inside the papers. So they get that in jail. So people are reading stories. They get inspired by my stories.
Oh, with your activism.
Yeah, with activism. I mean, so people telling them, like, and then ironically, how I go full circle is that when I was in Greater Ford, the imam at the time, a brother named Talha, right? He became my personal mentor, right? He had life in prison. He became my personal mentor. And when the first article came out about me in the front page of the Daily News telling my story, the aunt came to the barbershop. And when she came to the barbershop, she was fully garbed. So I didn't recognize her, because I knew her when I was a kid. She was like, you know who I am? I was like, nah, who are you? I thought she was like someone, the kid's mom or something, that came to get a haircut or something. So she said, no, I'm D. So when she said her name, and I looked at her, I said, oh, okay. I said, how you doing, Ms. D, how you doing? She's like, no, I forgive you. You know, for what? You know, Talha told me to come around here and talk to you. I mean, and about the story and tell you I forgive you. Because I read the article in the paper. She had the paper in her hand. I was like, Talha. She said, yeah, I married Talha. Talha, my husband. So she married the lifer in jail.
Sheesh.
And he told her, like, when she see the paper, she said, that's the guy who, you know, killed my nephew. And he's like, well, that's the kid I mentored when he was upstate. I mean, that's Latisse. That's Will. He's a good dude. Go talk to him. So he told her to come around and talk to me. That's how me and her had a conversation. Right. And she forgave me first. Right? So while he in jail, he run into people. And he's like, yo, Will, cool dude. So, he come home. He's still.
That probably got to be worse. Right? Like, you're harboring these ill feelings for this person who genuinely did something wrong. Right? Like, it doesn't... That's why I operate the way I operate. Because, like, I know in my mind, no matter how much good I do in my life and the people surrounding me, I still did those terrible things I did.
Right.
And that's why I'm always on
point.
On point. Because, like, just because I'm doing better now don't mean...
Don't mean they are. They, or they forgive you.
That don't mean
you.
They forgave me. You feel what I'm saying? So it's like... And like, me and Ryan, we're like these very weird people because, like, we understand why somebody wouldn't forgive us, just like we understand why we don't forgive people.
Right.
So it's like to have these very, very real feeling like somebody did something wrong to you and they are wrong. But now you are visually seeing them like succeed and you're hearing prosper, all these good wrong, things yeah. about them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It gotta be terrible. Like, it has to be terrible because now it's like you're surrounded by so many people showing love to this person that did something wrong to you, like that's got to be like a personal hell to live in. I can't even imagine.
Right. And that's why I respected him that on that level. I mean, because if it was me, I wouldn't have did the same thing. You know, so when he out there, he came home, he was still like coming to the shop. And he'd be in the shop. I don't even know he in the shop, but he'd be in the shop with me.
Because you never seen him.
I never seen him. Right. And another ironic thing is that the owner of the shop is actually the cousin of his own.
So the owner of the shop, that's not Jazz.
That's Jazz.
That's Jazz.
So
Jazz is the cousin of Kadir.
It's Terrence, his brother.
They have different fathers.
Yeah, different brothers.
Okay. So the cousin of the man you slain.
Right.
Okay. And then Kadir is coming to the shop and you've never seen him. And nobody's giving you a heads up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are they not giving you a heads up because they're scared of what could happen? Are they not giving you a heads up because they're figuring?
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
Oh, you gotta know this.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the thing was they didn't know how to take me. Period. Because I ain't know Jazz when I was young.
Gotcha.
Right. He ain't know me before I came into the barbershop. So a lot of dudes don't know.
They don't know what you.
Period.
Not even saying what you're capable of. They just don't know.
They don't
shit.
Know how to respond.
All they know is this nigga put in work back in the day.
Right. Back.
He did a dime. He back here.
Cutting hair.
We probably look the part. You probably
we don't know his
so you like
we don't know his reaction.
We don't know
to anything,
his body. And we
don't
like we say home.
And we don't want to start something that doesn't have to be anything.
So we just
at the end of the day, stay out of it. If it happens, it happens. But I have nothing to do.
But you're putting so much trust in. And like I said, I haven't had the pleasure of speaking to Kadir yet. Right. But it's like at that moment, you're putting a lot of faith in Kadir and setting shit
off. You put a lot of faith in both of them.
Right. Well, he don't know. Right.
But I'm saying, you also know he's coming, but you're not telling him.
That's what I'm saying.
So you're putting faith in him too.
You're putting more faith in Kadir because you're like, all right, Kadir, you know this is my people's shop. This is how we all make money. Don't make it hot. Basically what you're saying, like, and you're putting a lot of faith in him because you're not telling him. Because that faith would be evened out. It would be on both sides
if he knew.
He was aware. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I mean, shout out to everybody involved for
exactly.
keeping that for however long it happened. So when do you finally find out or when do y'all come face to face?
We come face to face. One morning I happen to go to the shop and I normally don't come to the shop like 8:30, 9 o'clock. So I come there for some reason early that day and I'm on a station, only me and Chuck. Now, Chuck is the other barber that you see in the documentary.
Yes.
Chuck is the guy who actually mediated the whole thing.
Right.
Because he was coming to see Chuck. Because him and Chuck were childhood friends. Even though Jazz was the cousin, but him and Chuck were childhood friends together, him and Cartier. So they having conversations outside the shop, basically. Telling like, yo, just do this and do that, change this and that. And when you watch the Behind the Bullet documentary, you'll hear more about what Chuck said about the situation. But he came in the shop that morning. And I thought he was a customer. Like, yo, let me talk to you for a minute. I was like, all right, give me a minute because I'm fixing my stuff. He's like, no, I want to talk to you. So when I turned around, I looked at him. I was like, what's up? He's like, I forgive you. And when he said those words, I knew exactly
it's
who he was.
2015.
It's 25 years later.
I mean, so I was like, hey, I said, all right, man. I said, I appreciate that, bro. I said, thank you. I mean, just to show the humbleness in me, right? Instead of saying like, I don't care about that. I mean, walking away. So I like,
which
you know,
is real.
Right.
I got a question. So from the first apology from the father, mm-hmm. who you said it wasn't a genuine.
Right.
Was this a genuine, I forgive you?
Definitely. Okay. I looked him in his eyes. I mean, and his whole expression showed me that. You know, so I took him in the back of the shop and said, let's sit down. Let's talk about this. Anyway, because I know you got some questions, I mean, and everything else. And he's like, no, I want someone to know what happened, what's going on. I mean, I still ain't say what happened, basically, but he understood the fact that he did wrong growing up, hurt people. I mean, that's the kind of climate we grew up in, basically, but it was all ignorance upon ignorance, and nobody wins in this situation. Like, if you kill me, then you think somebody will kill you or kill your family.
It don't end that way.
It don't end. It never ends, but this is the way we both wins.
It's a cycle.
This is the way this can end.
Yeah, it's a win-win for us. You know, so he understood that, and I like understood where he's coming from too, as well. Even still making adjustments, because you know, you can't be around me all the time. You can be around me sometimes, but sometimes he feels some type of way, and I understand. I had to empathize with that, understand that.
And you're talking about like
even after
y'all relationship now.
Yeah, afterwards. Yeah,
because this is what we're in 2019, so this is 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years. Yeah,
it's still. I mean. They say time heals all, but at the same time, memories still pop up.
I was about to say,
visions
like healing,
still happen.
It doesn't healing very rarely, and this is just me being who I am. I know everybody's gonna say, "Mouse, you're so extra, you're pessimist." Healing rarely is ever 100%.
Absolutely,
right? Like I haven't ran in a month. Right, this week will be, or whenever this comes out, this week y'all hearing this episode is my first week back to running. I hurt my leg a month ago. Mm. My leg can run. I will run fine. I can do 5 miles.
It's a mental thing.
No. There's literally a bone spur right here. Mm-hmm. But I can put pressure on. I can run. I'm good. I'm working out. But I'm healed. But there's a forever lasting thing right here. Mm-hmm. Right? You look at my whole body. I mean, it's... You look at my whole body, if you're in my circumference, you can look and see, oh, he got scars all over this right here. Right? This scar right here. I'm 100% healed.
But it's still
but
something
it's a scar.
There. It's
you get what I'm saying? There. So like time heals all wounds. That means the wound is healed. That don't mean the memories ain't there. That don't mean the feelings ain't there. That don't mean that.
And you just never
impression.
Know how a person wakes up that day.
Right.
Every day is different.
Right.
I could be happy. Me and you is best friend. That I could wake up one morning like, damn,
this nigga really did my man.
It could be any situation.
Oh, any situation.
But what I'm saying is like, at some point in time, it's like, yeah, we friends, but I remember that day. Like you took my lunch money. We was in third grade. Like I'm tight about that.
And I think going towards me and you, and you know, I don't believe in this airy whatever. Some moonshot. Yeah. I don't believe in that. But that's something that me and you share similar because I can see. Even before we became as close as we are now, it was evident that you moved like me. So it's like, oh, okay, me and Ryan are very intentional. Mm-hmm. So it's like we intentionally don't do wrong by each other or the rest of our friends because I never want you to ever be in a situation where you're like, damn.
He did that.
That nigga, you can't ever say that.
Right.
Me
right.
and Ryan do right, right by you. We right. do right by each other. We do mm-hmm. right by everybody in this room. So it's like.
I'd rather you know what I'm doing from jump.
Right.
Than have some hidden behind secrets.
But even when it comes to hurt, like I speak about this a lot, emotional pain. When it comes to that, a lot of us have self-inflicted emotional pain.
Wow.
From expectations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
I guess, and I think that's how we've learned to grow to not expect
nothing. Not expect nothing. Right. We will tell you right. We've been saying this since the day one. I go into every situation with zero expectation.
Right.
It could be a contract in front of me. Mm. I don't care what this contract stipulates. Mm. I have no expectation until
it's done.
After it's done.
Right.
So okay. Once it could say, hey, you sign this contract and every day on the 30th, you're going to get $3 million. I will not expect $3 million to the 31st.
Right.
Is when it's in my that's when I expect it.
Right.
When, oh, I got it. Oh, okay. I don't expect it because that's right. The easiest way for you to be disappointed. Then when,
especially as we grew up, we've always, in as black people, we've always been disappointed.
Right.
So that's where it really starts
and
off.
Then
at.
That, exactly. And then I believe the reaction, and you could probably speak to it more. Well, the reaction to our disappointment leads us to the situation that we find ourselves in.
Exactly.
That's just how I believe.
Right.
Like even if you could break it down, however you looking at from whatever way, the reaction to being disappointed of not having a father can lead you to being in the street. The reaction to not having emotional intelligence, like you said before, could lead you to make terrible decisions, lifelong terrible decisions, mm-hmm. series of them that'll put you in a cycle of just being on the wrong side of things. So it's
well, see, the reality is that everything we do is based on emotion, right? That is the motivating factor behind your action. The thought.
Even if it's like avoiding emotion?
Yeah, okay. You can't avoid emotion because you're still emotion. You're being numb. You're numbing yourself.
Right. So if you're numb, you're not experiencing the emotion, right?
No, you experience some kind of emotion.
But you're just numb to it.
See, what emotion is, and you break it down, emotion is actually the action. Feelings is what you have inside of you. See, they're the same coin. Their emotions and their feelings. Feelings is what you like. Anger is an emotion, right?
Okay.
But what you're feeling inside is depressed or embarrassed, mm-hmm. or something else.
So the feeling usually leads to the emotion.
Right. The feeling leads to the emotion.
Okay.
That creates the action.
Mm. So what is to be said about people like me and Ryan, where somebody close to us would say, and it doesn't always have to be like a romantic relationship, just like my mama says it and stuff, where somebody says you're unemotional. Right. So then what is that? If somebody is being unemotional or somebody is deemed as unemotional, what's that?
Well, I understand, because I mean, even to deal with life in itself, like you say, you lose a best friend, you get physically abused by someone, so you go through all these things, so you try to dehumanize yourself so you won't feel. You won't feel, but at the same time, you're feeling.
Even in not...
You're feeling something.
Feeling, you're feeling.
That's the reason why you're acting the way you're acting. That's why you're responding to it, because you're feeling something.
Hmm.
Right? But they say you're emotionless. A person may say you're emotionless because... Or you're numb because you're not responding to them.
Hmm.
But you're responding to yourself. Your body reacts to that. See, it's all connected. Like everything.
Like when we be quiet. Like when we get quiet. Yeah, everything's connected. About nothing.
Okay. And within the quietness, you can't have sound without the silence.
Nah, you just broke me. Wait,
yeah,
what?
Yeah,
say that one more time.
You can't have sound without the silence.
Explain that. I get it.
Right.
But I gotta hear that explained, because that's a ball. Like what?
What the parallel? Like life is in parallel. Everything is created in twos.
Yeah.
You have night and day, you have up and down, you have right and left.
Duality, everything.
Yeah, duality, exactly. So even with that, within the space makes the sound. Even in the piano, keys, guitar, music, within the space there is a sound created.
So hear that little something. Like we can't describe it, but everybody knows
it's still a sound.
Yeah, the ring, that right. ringing sound, even in dead silence.
Dead silence. Right.
The ring.
And it's the truth.
Yo, why are you so smart, yo?
Self-educated.
Man, smart, yo. Yo, like you just got to ask people sometimes.
Penn State.
Like, yo, Penn State. From the
state actually, thing. Really, the school of hard knocks, because I really got my education on the street.
Right.
Most of anywhere else.
Right.
The prison was just the start of it.
Right.
But when I came home, I continued.
You furthered your education.
I got my keys. You know what my keys are? What keys do?
Open doors.
Right. So the acronym for keys, what I teach in my classes, KEYS, keep educating yourself.
Sheesh.
Nah, son, I'm 30 years old.
It's mad tattoos I'm about to get.
Tattoos, son.
I'm about
I can't
to get
wait
new
to get,
tats.
Yo, it's about to be lit up in here, son.
I should just have your own.
That's why we got to bring the message to the people, man. We got to bring.
That's why it was so important. That's right. Why when K-Walk hit me. And I know everybody's going to feel the way, like, oh, I've been hearing you about, yeah, it's all right.
It just wasn't important. This was important.
This isn't a message right. that Philly's literally like my second home. Like,
right.
love Philly. Shout out to Corey Towns, Chris Thomas, Bino French, everybody down there. Like, so when I reached out and everybody was like, oh, that's the boy that, he hunted. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, all right. And then just did my research and story. I'm like, we got to hear this. Like, this is.
Absolutely.
You gotta hear
it. A lot of people get offended, like you said, because they reach out and they want to be honest. But it's not about you just coming to talk to us. If you can't teach our listeners, if you can't teach me nothing, I really don't want to have you up here.
I really don't want you in a room. Like, because you got to have an intention, right?
Yeah.
Like, our intention with the show is to show the full spectrum of a millennial black man, right?
Right.
We don't always have the answers. And I think we, me, Ryan, and Mac, we accept that, that we don't always have the answers. And then when you don't, you bring in somebody
who does
has the answers, exactly. The keys, right? Like,
if we just want to have a conversation, you can meet up with me anytime. We can talk. But to put on any platform, I want to speak for a lot of people that have platforms. To go on anybody's platform, there should always be a lesson at the end of the day.
Yeah, you want to bring value.
Exactly.
Like, there has to be intent. Like, right. We have our fun episodes.
Absolutely.
They have an intent.
Right.
All of them. They're all layered in some type of intent. Nobody just up here and we're just talking into a vacuum until somebody laughs.
And we all understand that everybody's lives are different and they feel like they can bring something to the table. But sometimes it's just not meant for this table. Right. It might be another table. You could teach a whole bunch of people stuff. That doesn't mean that we're not saying your life isn't amazing, what you're doing isn't great. It's just at the time and the place that we are, it's just not the time or the place
like this
to be spoken.
Super, like, obviously we're still talking, but like, just thank you for coming up here, reaching out. I know I'm hard to keep in contact with.
Hit me up next time.
You can fix your face. Thank you.
If you hit me up next time.
It would have been better hitting Ryan, but I was like,
but it worked out.
I was on it. I was like, nah, we got, because I kept doing the research.
But see, we ain't really tried. I mean, things work. Like me, I teach my nephew about universal laws, you know, and how that works for you in your favor, basically, and how you can control your own destiny, right? And he started using the principles. So, you know, that's why he's growing now. I mean, in this field of work. In his life. But the thing is, for me, is like purpose. I mean, everything happens for a purpose. I mean, and because something missed you doesn't mean it's going to keep passing you by.
And that's why there was a purpose with you meeting
Kadir.
Yeah, Kadir. Yeah, exactly. Like, no one would have thought in a million years that you would be working side by side with someone of the opposite side of what you went through.
Right.
No, I would never think it.
That's, I wouldn't.
And I'm not even calling him your enemy, but to him at one point in time, you were his enemy.
Of course.
So to be able to work with him after that is a testament of...
Because like you see all the time, like you see like the mothers of drunk driving victims working with a person who is convicted of drunk driving, but it's not the person that killed their kid. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's one thing.
Because a lot of times you don't even get to see that person anymore.
Right. Like that's one thing.
It's a blessing on its own that we're able to sit next to you
to sit directly in such close confines with somebody on the direct opposite side of something.
I could already tell when y'all talk to people, it brings a story more to life.
Right.
Because it's not, oh, I'm a victim of this crime and this person is on the opposite. They're a family member of somebody that lost on this side of crime. This is one story we're telling.
Mm-hmm.
This is one complete story. This is how I was feeling at this moment. This is how I was feeling at this moment. We came together to educate others on how to break things down in that situation.
And that's what I want to talk about. So y'all meet, y'all speak.
Y'all go in the back room.
And break bread and whatever is said in that moment is private to that moment, but y'all come out immediately. Y'all come out in this unified way, or was it okay? You forgive me, I forgive you. What's that connecting factor where you guys are like, where you guys become friends?
Yeah, what was the next steps to that?
Well, see, the thing was that after he said he forgave me. Right. And I accepted it. Like, you know, and I thanked him for it. You know, his coverage for doing that, too, because we know where we come from, the confines we come from and how the attitude and mentality is. And he was like, yo, man, he said a whole relief was let off my shoulder. You know, he said, I'm like, all this is off my shoulder now. So now I can just kind of move forward and live my life better than I've been living it. I mean, medication, drugs, all the stuff like that. I mean, it's just that he was using the substance to really cope with the loss of his brother and his mother, you know. So I said, look, this would be a great idea to share this with some of my media friends, you know, the story, because there's no story like that, especially in the city of Philadelphia. We averaging 300 something murders a year. You know, this story needs to be told. I mean, we went against the grain far as the street.
Absolutely.
Street
no pun
absolutely.
Intended, because y'all was in the barber right. shop. You know?
I like that, right? Yeah, right, right, you're an excellent podcast.
You know, so, I'm trying.
I mean, I had to make sure he was comfortable enough to even share the story to the media and to expose it to the world, and even to some of his family members who probably wasn't okay with that.
Right.
Or some of his friends who wasn't okay with him doing that because they expected him to do something different. You know, and he's like, I got to be a man for myself first and foremost, you know, and I had to come to a point where as though, I mean, I ain't trying to be in jail for the rest of my life, you know, or has something happened to me, you know, so you come to an age in life when you mature, you grow, you learn. I have people I shot at, I mean, almost took somebody's life. He a cop now, this dude. He a cop now. He comes back to the barbershop all the time. Wait, hey, what's up? How your family doing? So I know that he forgets. Just through his actions.
Same shit.
I mean,
same shit.
I look at that like, yo, I could have just took this dude's life, man, for nothing, basically. I mean, so
there's mad people that like there's mad people I did stuff to that's like you said, in a sense forgiving me and show love now.
Right.
It's a point where people have to understand that they're actually proud of where you came.
But I can't. I can't. Like all of the people that ever did something to me, it's still an issue. Like it's still when I see this nigga, don't speak to me. Don't come too close to me. I don't want to I've literally left.
Forgiveness is not really forgiveness is not just having a relationship with the person. Forgiveness is part is more so like, all right, I'm a debt,
I'm gonna let it go. I mean,
you still I'm there. I'm there where I'm like it's not an issue no more.
Do it again.
Right.
I'm not gonna allow you to do it again to me or even come that
close
that
enough.
Close to me. You know what I'm saying like that? Because even you might know people you grew up with you're not close with anyway.
That's a fact.
I mean, so
and they ain't do nothing to you. It's exactly, just y'all grew apart.
Just not close with them. Just not connected to that person. So even with that person, it's like, most all right, it's cool. Whatever it is, I'm done with you. I mean, I could still probably speak to you, say what's up, what's going on. But I'm not allowing you. Now, it's my fault if I allow you to do the same thing to me again. It's my fault. I mean, so the reality is that you get over that part, whereas you can continue to move on your life. You know what I'm saying? Move forward in your life. And that's what we have done. Like even sometimes me and Carter together, I forget about the whole story. I forget about even what happened.
You just see a friend.
Yeah, see as a friend. I mean, basically. Like, even some of the friends, like, I did stuff, too. When I see them on the street, playing ball with them, busting up. What's up with your kids, man? How your son doing? You know, we doing good. And, like, when that state of ignorance we was when we was children and teenagers, like, we knew we was all in a state of ignorance. We knew we was taught wrong. We knew we was taught backwards.
We were just surviving.
Yeah, we were surviving. The best of our
you also got to understand what you was doing. Like there's a street code to it,
and we were playing a certain
game. Once you enter that game, right. That playing field, you can't be. You could be upset and that, but you can't.
Yeah,
you can't take. I'm better than you, and we was doing the same thing. Right. No, you were shooting,
and
I was shooting.
The deer shows that more than anyone I've ever met or seen, even myself. Because, like I said, I know I was playing a game. But I don't give a fuck. You tried to do something to me. You tried to make me lose the game, and now I'm mad. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you tried to make me lose. Nah, fuck out of here. So now, like, that's just an amazing story. So what was the first public thing, or what was the first act that y'all did to show the world this?
Well, we did the story with the Daily News and Fox News. And actually, Daily News brought it out first. Mm-hmm. It was on the front page. Then he was getting a lot of calls. Yo, you on the front page? And people was calling me. Yo, you on the front page? A great story, et cetera, et cetera. Then Fox News did the aftermath of that, when we was actually going to schools and speaking in different places and holding programs in the community. And they showed like really the activism. So he was never in activism, so he had to get involved in it some kind of way. So I had to teach him, take him out speaking and stuff like that. So
does he practice Islam as well?
Yeah, he Muslim too. So Basically, that first we started doing. Then we started a mentoring program in the barbershop. So I started mentoring young men and women in barbershops and salons. And I got a few men in the community to join in with us to actually do that. I mean, share your skills, share your talent, give back. Especially those who you know was out there hustling, selling drugs and doing this and that, Y, Z. Like, you got children now. I mean, just give back to these children who don't have parents in their life or fathers in their life or have direct guidance. You know, so we did the mentoring program. We had like 50 kids. Come to the barbershop every Monday. I'm working with them and teaching them. And I had other guys coming from different aspects. Like, even the dude from The Wire, he came. The cop boy played in The Wire. He came.
McNulty?
Not McNulty. The other light-skinned one. The big heavy-set one.
Oh, Wendell Pierce.
He came. He talked to the kids for us. We had a guy from the Philadelphia Black Orchestra talk to the kids. We had like different people from different aspects of life and different fields of life come talk to the kids to discover what they may want to do in their life when they get older. You know, so that program went for like 6 years. Because it started before me and Carter thing, but we started to create a group called RFP, which means Redemption, Forgiveness, and Peace. So Chuck played the peace part because he was like the immediate, mm-hmm. and then you know, redemption, forgiveness. Right. Us too. You know, so we created that, and that's what people I see people need in their life. They need to redeem themselves from things they haven't done to people, and they also need to forgive people that hurt them as well, and then to create that peace within themselves. But I understand that a lot of people are at war with themselves, so they don't have peace within themselves. And what's inside of you will come out, just like an orange. If you squeeze an orange, it will come out of an orange.
The inside,
orange juice, yeah. Right? Not apple juice, not grape juice, but orange juice.
Right.
So same thing with people. When life squeezes you, what comes out of you is really what's inside of you. And that's what you got to know. This becomes self-aware. More self-awareness comes. Then you know how to manipulate that and control yourself and create your best reality.
So what is the overall message? What is the overall goal and the overall message that you and Kadir, but since you're here, that you want to see from your activism? What do you want the people like me, like Ryan, the young bulls coming up in Philly, what is it that you want them to grasp hold of most?
Self. I want them to grasp hold of self and understanding their true gifts and talents. I mean, it's not being like everybody else, not letting the world dictate who you are, but being able to control and dictate who you want to be in life. Basically, so even with me and Kadir's story, and that is like for the streets, letting people know in the streets that whatever city you're in and you're going through this gang violence and shooting and killing, it's like the streets lie to you. I mean, the streets is an ultimate liar. So don't believe the streets, believe in yourself and start focusing on what you can become. I mean, that's to be a contribution to the world, not taken away from the world. And we're going to share that pretty soon. We got a project we're working on. It's a big project. I don't want to share it because I'm a producer. I just left it earlier today. But we got a big project that we're working on.
Well, listen, if you need our help in any way.
Anyway, we here.
I can speak for the whole team. We'll be there. Okay. Regardless, however it needs to go down. Thank you. Thank you. I know he's not here, but thank Kadir as well. Right. Thanks to Kay Walker for reaching out and making this happen. And like, just thank you, like, for just being able to be you and come up here and share your story. Right. And just, I say this all the time to people who've been in any situation, like, just thank you for continuing to live. Because you could have easily essentially stopped living. Like, you could have just said, you know, I'm a be in jail. That's where I'm going to be at.
Right.
And your story wouldn't be here today to change lives. Right. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for sharing your platform.
This definitely, especially for me at Mouse, when it comes to forgiving, it's kind of put me in a better place of understanding myself. Right. And maybe I'm not necessarily saying I'm going to reach out to people that I need to forgive. Right. But when it comes to them.
I was scared. I'm like, right.
Yeah, no.
Because I ain't calling them.
I'm not calling them, but it's more about me and not them.
Right, exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter if they don't forgive me. If I can forgive someone and I don't put pressure to them when I see them, it's more of me just them letting know that just let it go. Because at certain parts of time, you got to let things go.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying don't be hurt by someone or just let him, like, you can do whatever you want to me. Of course, I will never let that happen again, like you said. But at the end of the day, I'll give people a chance for me just not to have an action or a reaction to something they might do.
Right.
I think that's all that needs to be said. You know what? We have you here. We've been deep for two episodes. Let's lighten it up just a little bit. Here on The Guy Next Door, we do something called the Get the Drawers playlist.
The what?
Get the Drawers playlist.
Okay.
So it's just a playlist that you just add a song to. Mm-hmm. That if it played while you're setting the mood, panties are dropping.
Okay.
Just add one song. Well, you know, you can add two songs because your story is well worth it.
Okay.
So let's start with you. What are you adding to the playlist? And this playlist lives on, so shout out to y'all. Y'all be loving this playlist. Y'all nasty asses. Shout out to y'all. So you can find a playlist on Tidal. You can find a playlist on Spotify. You can find a playlist on Apple Music. So, well, what you putting on the playlist?
So I'm from old school, so I'm definitely going to put LTD Love Ballads on it.
Okay.
That's the shit, boy. Sure. Jeffrey Osborne, boy.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and then what's the second one?
My second one is Osley Brothers. I got a like
Which one?
You gotta pull my Ozzy Brothers. Let me know.
Let me know. Sure. Right. You're that's going pressure. After Rye, that's a hard act to follow. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
All right. I'm going to go back to my guy, my man Barry White. I'm going to go back to my man Barry.
Oh, we staying old school today?
I'm going to go old school.
You've been in a Barry White bag now that I think about it.
He's been moving some souls, you know? I'm going to go, you're the first, the last, my everything.
My everything.
Everything.
I'm going to say, if we're keeping it in the old school bag.
Nigga made me sweat. That was a point.
Two back-to-back joints. He backed out fire. That's it. And shorty, even if she don't know the song, she's like, you know, just whatever.
Serenade.
Whatever you want to do. I'm going to do, it's in the Isley Brothers wave. It's actually a flip of an Isley Brothers song, Footsteps in the Dark, which is responsible for all our favorite samples, Between the She's Good, all that shit. I'm going to do Thundercat.
Oh. Not old school, but I get it.
But you, because it's the flip of that Footstep in the Dark record.
I get it.
Yeah, that's a record, though. That's a record. I should probably say the name, right?
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say
it. I keep saying, what is this shit called? My bad.
He don't even know.
I know the song.
It's all right. He don't know, yo.
It's called Them Changes. Shut up.
He don't know.
Shut up. Them Changes, Thundercat. Wow. We got an episode, and we got two fire-ass records on to get the Drawers playlist. Yeah. We can't ask for more. Well, one more time, tell the people where they can support your business. Come get a cut by you if they in Philly. Follow you, support the two documentaries, one Emmy Award winning. How did that feel winning an Emmy for your story?
Well, man, you know, it was really good to hear that we won, because I knew the story was good anyway. It was great. But I just didn't know how the world would accept it, basically. But when she called me and told me that it won, she didn't even show up. Joyce Evans, who was the producer. And she was like, she didn't expect to win either, because, you know, those kind of Emmy Awards is kind of hard. So she told me about it. I was excited about it. It was really good. Now I know I can take it to another level, another platform, you know, and tell people about the story. So once it got out, I put it on YouTube, and people started watching it. It went viral when they put it on Fox News anyway. Right. So I knew it was a very important subject that people wanted to hear and see for themselves. But it felt really good. It felt really good to know that. So now, like, the other projects now, it's on to the next project.
Right.
And hopefully it's the next documentary, even though it's just me and three other people in the Behind the Bullet documentary. But a lot of people do connect and relate to my section of the movie, because I'm the only one who went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the only one who really seemed like they transformed themselves.
Both sides.
Yeah. So.
And then where else could they find you?
You can find me on my page, Will Little. The other ones are filled up. So that one, Will Little. You can find me on LinkedIn under Will Latif Little. You can find me on Instagram under Latif, LATIF _ Muhsin, MUHSIN. You can find me on Instagram under Mr. MR Poetry in Motion. You can also find me, where else? You can find me on Amazon. Find a documentary on Amazon Prime. And Fandango and YouTube and PlayStation and Vudu. You can also find my book on Amazon.com. I See Why, Life and Times of Will Little. Or you can order it from me directly. Get your signed copy. And you can email me at litwillie, littwillie@aol.com if you have any questions, comments, or concerns. And we can talk then, basically. That's all.
And if they in Philly, where can they come get a cut?
In Philly, come get a cut from Jazz You Up. I don't know how long we'll be doing it. I might retire soon. But
you got three, you can't retire before you.
I got y'all. I mean, but 16 for Task at Jazz You Up Barbershop in Philadelphia, South Philadelphia area. Zip code 19145.
Shout out to everybody in Philly. You know, Philly literally is like my second home. I love Philly. Ryan, you got any church announcement? Anything going on?
We gonna be on the road soon.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Mouse about to get on, talk his trap karaoke shit out. Yeah, Jesus it's about Christ, to happen. So let me just say for him, on October 13th, we at the Knockdown Center in Massachusetts.
October 13th, really? I'm not even going to say it. Shout out to Trap Karaoke, greatest show on earth. Follow at Trap Karaoke on Instagram. Go to www.trapkaraoke.com to see when we are coming to your city. And last but not least on this issue of Trap Karaoke, I don't book the cities. If you want your city on the tour and you don't see a city on tour, go to www.trapkaraoke.com and sign up for your city. Have enough people hit the city, and then the team will do their best to book a reasonable price venue for you guys. Other than that, thank you to Will. Thank you, Kadir. Thanks, Kay Walker, for setting us up. Shout out to all of Philly. Like, I can't say enough how much I absolutely love Philly. It is the only other place other than New York City that I would actually live. So shout out.
You haven't to been too many places. But
that's actually a lie now. I've been a few places. Niggas is terrible.
It's all right. Bro. It's all right. It's
just I've been in the Bahamas. Respect me. In Canada.
During the storm. Yo.
Son, niggas just want to get out of the country, son.
I was like, you know, a storm coming niggas to Bahamas.
No,
so what?
No.
So what?
I said that after the fact. Dude, like, you know, a storm coming. I said, I had no idea. No fucking idea.
It don't matter to me. You checked the weather? Nope, nope.
Don't check. I checked the flight. That's what I checked. But shout out to that. I think that's it. Now that's all the church announcement. Great episode. We thank Will. And if this hit you and it made you feel that was its purpose, if you see this story and see yourself in it, that was the purpose. And make sure you follow us, guys_next_door on Instagram. Email us, guysnextdoor123@gmail.com. I know y'all gonna say, why say that and you didn't read a letter? You thought we was gonna read one of y'all situationship ass letters?
Not on this.
We got
episode.
This man. Like, don't worry, I'm not about to let him see how ignorant y'all ass is. We'll find out on his own. But yeah, shout out to y'all. We love
Thank
you.
Appreciate
the neighborhood.
Y'all.
We would not be here without y'all. 500+ thousand listens. That
it's
shit
like six
is
now.
Not. We at six now, but the shit is not. It's not to be played with. It's not to be undeserved. Trey, what happened?
The London folk are requesting we do a live show out there.
Hey, London folk. So
you don't gotta tell me
book us. It's very easy to do that. Just book us. Shout out to the people in London. If you want us to book a live show there, let's do it. Anybody who wants to do a live show, hit the email. guysnextdoor123@gmail.com. Don't email us if you just say, hey, we want you to come. How? If you're not a person who can afford to book us, do not email us about coming to your city. I'm not interested in taking a road trip. I think that's all we got for today. I'm pretty sure. Che, James, thank you guys for your hard work as always. I've been Mouse Jones.
I'm Fly Ra.
I'm Will Little.
And this has been The Guys Next Door.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.